Today's episode of The Farm Report is a pre-recorded episode from spring 2013.
Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network. This is the Farm Report, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. And today we are joined on the line by Justin Rashid of American Spoon. Justin, thanks so much for taking some time to speak with us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
So I'm in particular excited to talk today because you are located back in my home state of Michigan, actually about an hour and a half from where I grew up. And what I would love to start folks out with was just a little bit of background on American Spoon Fruit for people who might not have heard of you yet.
Okay. Well, we've been here for 31 years in Petoskey, Michigan, which is at the very top of the 300-mile-long fruit belt where the lake effect of Lake Michigan creates one of the most superb microclimates for fruit culture in the world, and we've been preserving the best fruits that we can find here these years, and we sell, I would say, 85% of what we produce direct to customers around the country.
Nice. So you guys are making jams and preserves for folks.
Fruit preserves, yes, jams, condiments, relishes, all kinds of things.
So
in jars, mostly we're kind of the canner for a lot of our customers.
Got it. So maybe you can take us through a little bit, you know, fruit production along that western coast of Michigan. What types of fruits are we going to be seeing in your jams?
Well, of course, as you know, Erin, 75% of the park cherries grown in the country are grown in Michigan, and most of them here in northern Michigan in the Traverse City area. Those are tart Montmorency cherries, so certainly we make a lot of cherry products, but we also grow wonderful pears. We love the Bartlett pears that grow here, and apples, some of the great old apple varieties like Northern Spies that have been grown here for a long, long time, Damson plums, Red Haven peaches, of course. Red Haven, as you know, is a proud is a peach that Michigan is proud of because it was actually developed here, along with all of the other family of Haven peaches back in the 1920s through the 1940s, and that is considered by many to be, you know, the ultimate peach in the world, the peachiest peach, I would say. And that's what we really try to do here is find, you know, the strawberry that is, in our opinion, the standard, the ultimate classic strawberry flavor and aroma, or the peach that has the most ideal texture and flavor and aroma. And we become attached to those varieties because of their characteristics and their kind of universal appeal.
Well, so one of the things that, you know, you see jam jars, preserve jars on the shelves of, you know, any supermarket from like a small scale artisanal production like the preserves that you're making to kind of very large scale jam production that you'll find in, you know, any supermarket anywhere in the country. And one of the things I think I haven't in the past spent a ton of that time thinking about is where is that fruit coming from? And, you know, you guys are sourcing primarily or exclusively from Michigan.
I wouldn't say exclusively, no, but yeah, the great bulk of what we do is locally grown.
And, you know, the cherry production, as you said, 75% of the tart cherries produced in the U.S. are grown in that northwest region of the state. But There was last year was kind of a crazy season, so maybe you can fill us in a little bit on what happened and talk a little bit about how that impacted, you know, the region and your business.
Sure. Well, it was a disaster. To put it bluntly, for the second time in the past 10 years, the crop was pretty much wiped out. I would say there was about, some people say 2 or 3% of a tart cherry crop. Because of, you know, some people would say climate change, but certainly there was a big climate change last year, and we had 80-degree weather, like 10 days of 80-degree weather in March. And so the opposite of what we like to happen happened. All the fruit trees blossomed way too early, and so were hit by, oh gosh, more than a dozen subsequent frosts that just pretty much over time eliminated most of what we grow. And I think there were some apple farmers who did okay, but there were virtually no peaches, no cherries, and no plums. There were some pears. It was a really crazy year. And so we're looking out the window now, and it's 36 degrees and overcast and miserable, and all the fruit growers are very happy because we're right on schedule. It's a typical, a very typical northern Michigan spring, and the sun is going to come out soon, but it didn't come out too soon.
Now, you have been, you know, making the American spoon fruit in that region for, the, like you said, over 30 years now. Can you talk a little bit about the variation that you've seen with regards to the fruit producers in that area? You know, a year like last year, has that happened a few times in over the course of the last three decades, or was this an anomaly?
Well, the old-timers would say that that happens once every 50 years, and that's why everybody's a little bit freaked out that it happened twice in 10 years. Fruit culture, you know, being a fruit grower, it's like a lot of agriculture, it's a lifestyle choice. It's not, you know, a typical career choice. And for the most part, because it takes so long, because the sites where fruit grows well are pretty special. Most of these farms are, you know, small family farms, 40 to 80 acres, that have been in the same family for generations. And, you know, gosh, our relationships with our growers last a long, long time. They develop slowly, and they last a long, long time, and they're very important to us, and we're very important to them. I think the big change I saw, let's take, you know, Gary Bardenhagen, who grows all of our early glow strawberries for us, and has on a centennial farm near Sutton's Bay, Michigan, beautiful place. And for most of those years, I heard about his son, who was in the computer programming business and had moved away because, you know, there didn't seem to be a great future in farming. And he came back. His son came back and has taken over the farm and operates the Bardenhagen farm now. Into another generation. So I've seen a lot of that, or enough of that to be quite encouraging. And in addition to that, we have more vegetable farms, and because of the resurgence of farm markets, we have a lot of people growing wonderful things for us that we never used to be able to get locally, like, you know, heirloom tomatoes, Brandywine tomatoes, great rhubarb, all kinds of things that we couldn't get really close in the early days of our company. We can get them right here in Emmett County or Charlevoix County, the neighboring county.
So it sounds like you're feeling relatively optimistic about agriculture, in particular for, you know, fruit growers in your region.
I'm absolutely thrilled and pretty much amazed at what has happened in recent years with I guess it's your generation, Aaron. I don't know how old you are, but the number of people, because when Larry and I started this company, we were considered to be kind of odd. You know, that in the late 1970s, you know, when Wendell Berry published The Unsettling of America, it all seemed to be that agriculture in America was the past. And now it suddenly seems to have such a resilient, thriving future prospect, and because so many really talented people are getting involved in agriculture and small-scale food production locally and building those communities. I'm just astounded and thrilled, and we have quite a community here. From, as you know, Traverse City has become kind of a foodie capital, and the wine region of the Leelanau Peninsula, right up on up through the counties, through Petoskey, we have all these great local growers now, and it's amazing what you can find in the local markets. Now, we've never defeated seasonality. That's still seasonality is still the reality of living in northern Michigan. So we do need the ability to preserve foods so that we can use them a little bit more of the year. I would say the typical fruit season here lasts about 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Sure. When, you know, apricots are in season for about 3 weeks, right? Or, you know, plums, 3 weeks. So you can see why in this climate, being good at preserving fruit was pretty critical if you wanted to enjoy it more of the year, especially something local.
Yeah, well, and I think that also speaks to the kind of workflow for your operation. I mean, while things are coming in and out of season, is it basically, you know, all hands on deck?
Oh, that's exactly what it's like. In fact, we try to get enough inventory produced so that we can shut down our kitchen in terms of manufacturing for the month of August right through the middle of September, so that we can peel and pit peaches, so that we can pit apricots, so that we can cut pears, so that we can peel and preserve tomatoes. That's what we're doing for August and September. Even things like, you know, destemming wild elderberries and cleaning wild blackberries that come in the door. It's a very intense but an exciting time. And we have a lot of people in the local community to come and help us in that time of year. And you'd be surprised how enjoyable a lot of people find standing at a long table with a dozen other people for 10 hours a day.
Yeah, well, it definitely reminds my mom was a big pickler, preserver, canner, so we definitely, me and my five brothers and sisters, made our own little assembly line in our house over on the eastern side of the state. Now,
yep.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about kind of this idea of, terroir, and also branding. I mean, obviously, your guys, because it's a preserved product, you can find mm-hmm. these Northern Michigan fruits, on shelves year-round across the country. But I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the intention. You know, you guys obviously have been an ambassador for the region, and kind of telling that story through the delicious spoon fruits. But Are there other players that are kind of out there working to make a name for Northern Michigan, to say, like, our fruit is different or special? And who would those folks be? How has that changed over time?
That's a good question. I think that there are, that what we see, what I see is an abundance of growers who bring their own preserved fruits to market stands. So because, fruit preserving is a business that, or an activity that there are relatively few barriers to entry, especially when, like the Michigan Department of Agriculture is trying to make it possible for growers to preserve and sell their own produce, be it pickles or that's the big thing I see, is that, rather than being a few larger producers, there are many, many small producers who actually sell direct to consumers. You know, the Petoskey downtown farm market is on Friday, and maybe they're in the neighboring town of Charlevoix on Wednesday, or they're in Traverse City another day of the week. And so it creates a pretty steady outlet for the things that they produce. Also, You see a lot of them actually opening their own retail. A lot of growers are opening their own retail stores, or retail outlets, right on the farm or along the highway near their farms, where they can sell both their fresh and preserved foods. So I think that's the biggest change that I've seen. Rather than there are a lot of new competitors for what we do, it's something that I guess the clearest local example would be Pond Hill Farm in Harbor Springs. That's kind of created a destination for themselves, and they also grow some things for us. But they've created a destination for a lot of people who want to go out to the farm and take the kids and spend some time learning about agriculture.
Yeah, well, I think, that's a great point that the region has become an ambassador for itself, a big tourism community. I know there's a certain redheaded New York-based chef who spends a lot of time up there. So folks coming and having a great time and kind of taking that out. Well, we are going to take just a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the role of a preserve maker in the context of fruit producers and the life of fruit. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to R&R by Peels on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
We are back. We are on the line with Justin Rashid of American Spoon Fruit. So, Justin, one of the things that I think is so interesting about fruit producers is that you're looking for outlets for all different types of fruit. You have kind of your, I think for apples, I know I'm more familiar with the language, but you have your first, your first pick, your second pick, And there's fruit of varying kind of quality. You'll see changes in size over the course of the season. And, obviously you guys are always looking to purchase the best fruit to make the best jams. But where do you think that you fit in, if folks who are looking to sell just, fresh cherries versus dry cherries versus the preserves? There's all these different ways to consume it, even juice or wine going. So as far as if I'm a fruit producer in your region, what am I looking to you guys for that may be different than kind of other outlets that I'm going to find for my fruits?
Well, we're looking for the special things that the kind of preserving we do is very labor intensive. It's very time consuming. It's a more expensive process. And so we're looking for special things that are worth the effort. It's kind of like if you were in your home kitchen and you were thinking, what's worth spending my time preserving? You wouldn't want to preserve just any old thing. You'd want to preserve the really special things. And that's what growers know to come to us for when they have something really, really special, really unique. They'll call us. Or when they want to develop a relationship that lasts for a long, long time to grow a specific variety that we're looking for. That's probably, I would say, more than a dozen growers who we have that kind of a relationship with. And then what we're trying to do is, use all of the hard-earned knowledge of artisanal pre-processing and processing that we've gained over the years to really retain and enhance the aesthetic perception of those higher value characteristics in the final product to the consumer. I'll give you an example. The Red Haven peach used to be the most popular peach in the world in the early 1960s. It has fallen out of favor because growers want a whole different range of peaches that ripen at different times, and the canners want to use high-powered equipment, live peelers, steam peelers, so they want a bulletproof peach that they can just, you know, peel industrially and then add a lot of sugar syrup or corn syrup or whatever, and you've got something that's orange and round, and you can call it a peach. But why did they no longer peel the delicious Red Haven peach? Well, it's a melting flesh, freestone variety of peach, so it can't be subjected to that. And so you have to hand sort them to let them ripen evenly, and then you have to, you know, do what you did at home. You pour them in boiling water, then pour them in cold water, then hand peel them, hand pit them. But as a result of doing all that, you end up with, you know, the ultimate chunky peach preserve, these luscious, succulent chunks of beautiful, rosy, orange peach, along with that incredible classic aroma of peach. It's a lot of work, and we can only do about 1,000 bushels a year before we just... we can't peel any more peaches. You know, we spend about 2 weeks, and then we're done. But that's what we're here to do. Those things that the big guys won't do anymore. The people who buy our preserves perceive that difference. And, or for example, you know, Bartlett pears that have to be ripened in our kitchen. Well, we have to cut them by hand. You know, you have to cut the stem off and cut the blossom end off, and then you've got to scoop out the seeds and cut them into chunks and, you know, macerate them in sugar and do the things that we do. But then we have wonderful pears that we can use year-round, you know. And that's why we exist, to do those things that the big guys don't want to do.
So you guys essentially rising up to fill that niche. Well, it sounds like a lot of work. Ultimately, to make a quite lovely product that I think is going to stand out from any jam that you could just pull off the shelf in a regular supermarket. Can you tell us a little bit about your kitchen? I mean, now you guys cook the preserves in copper kettles, is that right?
Sure, yeah, they're copper kettles on gas stoves. Each kettle, we've got typically about 7 kettles running at a time. Each kettle holds, it's a 28-gallon capacity kettle, but so that they don't overflow when something bubbles up, we can make about 10 gallons of preserves in a kettle at a time, maximum. And so what we've done over the years as we've grown is just rather than, you know, batch size, anybody who preserves fruit can tell you batch size is critical. You have to keep the batch size small. So rather than, having a 200-gallon kettle, we keep the 28-gallon kettles and just use more of them and turn them over, you know, throughout the day. So copper, of course, conducts heat, as you know, 18 times more efficiently than stainless steel. So we only switch to steel kettles when we're, you know, making pickles or making something that has, vinegar and salt and those things that don't allow us to use copper because it's reactive. But so that's what we have. And then we have 2 cooks working those kettles, working that, we call it, in a given run of kettles when we're turning over a batch. And then we have a little filling machine where we can fill a couple jars at a time, and a long cooling tunnel. You know, the trick with preserving, of course, is you're trying to get the product and the jar and the headspace and the lid, everything to come together at sterilization temperatures, And then you have the opposite problem. Once you get that all together and once that jar seals, you've got to get the heat out. So the whole 5,000 square foot kitchen has a long cooling tunnel where the jars spend a half an hour in a shower of cool water so that the heat gets out. Because, you know, what you're really trying to do with these delicate fruits and the color and the aroma of the fruit is, you know, use a minimum of sugar to preserve them. Or sweetener or preserve or whatever the agent is, and then you want to get that heat out of there so that it doesn't continue to cook in the jar. And when people open it, they'll get that incredible fresh aroma and that color and that flavor.
Interesting. And can you talk a little bit about the regulatory environment around preserve production? Do you guys, I mean, who kind of oversees what you're doing? And I'm curious if it's different for, you said, you know, you mentioned this kind of rise in folks doing the preservation right on farm. So does that fall under a different category than you would be dealing with, or is it the same?
Yes, if their sales are below a certain level, they come under a different regulatory, agency. But once they hit a certain volume, if they grow, that's when the Michigan Department of Agriculture takes over. The Michigan Department of Agriculture Food Inspection Division takes over. And they come in and inspect you one or two times a year. And then when you get as big as we are, you have the FDA. You have the big guys come in, the Food and Drug Administration. And most of it is, you know, to certify that you are... what we do is called acidified and high acid processing, which means that we are making products that have a pH of 4.5 or below. So that nothing we make is low acid, so nothing we make has a risk of botulism. But we have to make sure that we are achieving sterilization temperatures and holding at that sterilization temperature for a long enough time to accomplish what they call in the biz thermal death. And then we have to be able to certify that we achieve the pH, a safe pH in those products. So we have our own little lab where we, you know, take a jar from each batch and do all our testing and then document that testing. So, it's a process. There's a lot of technical food science involved in it that we've learned over the years. But the great thing is that there are great teachers out there for people who want to do this themselves. You know, the Michigan Department of Agriculture has people who can help you learn this stuff. The Agricultural Extension Service at Michigan State University can be helpful. There's a lot of technical learning to be done, but there's a lot of information out there that's available, and people can learn it. I did. I was an English major, so.
I think, English majors will someday rule the world. I'm hopeful anyway. Well, Justin, thanks so much for joining us. I think if folks want to find out more or get a better sense of where you're located or find out where they can find your jams, they can definitely visit the website, www.spoon.com. But is there a time that you would recommend for visits or not recommend? Is there a space where people can come and see you work, or, you know, do you guys do internships or anything like that for folks who might want to get into the jam making business?
Well, yes, we do from time to time bring people in, and certainly I'd welcome people giving us a call or sending me an email if they're interested. But of course, the beautiful time to come to Northern Michigan and for the fruit to see what's happening in fruit culture is this year probably going to be the third week of May when most of the trees are blooming. But we have little stores in the towns here in Petoskey and Charlevoix and Traverse City and Harbor Springs where people can come and see what we do and taste everything, and that's another way to get in touch with us.
Awesome. Well, Justin, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, this has been another episode of The Farm Report. Thank you so much for tuning in. This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, is available for free as a download through iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio or visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. You can peruse our archives and find out all you need to know about pretty much anything in food. If you like what you hear, we hope you'll consider clicking that donate tab and becoming a member today. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. What's hot at the green market? You're about to find out now. It's the Grow NYC Market Update.
This is Leah Eden. We are on the line today with Jean Hodish from Grow NYC. Hello, how are you doing on this rainy, rainy day?
We're all right. Thanks for having us.
Of course. Well, we are still on our tour of the green markets. There are so very many. But Jean, what neighborhood green market are we going to go to this week?
So this week we're going to head up to the heart of Midtown Manhattan, our Rockefeller Center Green Market. It's open for about 5 weeks every summer, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So it's open now through August 23rd. And it's a really terrific showcase of local products that let visitors from around the world know just what our region is made of. And then in between all those international flags and the skyscrapers, the lines to get into Top of the Rock, you'll find just as many employees who are on lunch breaks from their neighboring office buildings. Mingling with the tourists and everybody side by side, kind of checking out all of the wonderful produce, the apricots, the blackberries, fresh corn, maple syrup, chutney and jam, and all of them just considering what to take home.
Oh, very nice. Well, if we were to go there, what specific farmers or products can we find at that market?
Sure. So our publicity team went up there for breakfast this morning, and there's so many good options. So the market is set up in the middle of Rockefeller Plaza, and there are these kind of white picket fences around it. So you kind of go in, and the lineup of farmers is different each day. There are some farmers who are there all 3 days of the week, but the best thing to do is check our website to see who's there. But on Thursdays, there was Central Oven Bakery, Las Delicias Bakery also. There are a lot of baked goods. Which is perfect for our breakfast expedition. So Las Delicias has Argentinian baked goods. They have some gluten-free options, these really amazing little cakes called cannelay that are almost like they're very custardy. They're amazing. Nordic Breads is there with their famous Finnish Ruis rounds, and they're also making a new rye-based granola. So if you think about kind of rolled oats, the rye version of that, really hearty breakfast food. And then also Good Ale Farms is there. They've got yogurt you can pick up and take with you, as well as ice cream. They have fresh cheese as well. And then Migliorelli Farm, Red Jacket Orchard, and the Orchards of Conklin are keeping the market full of cherries, apricots, blueberries, fabulous-looking mustard greens, lettuces, sweet corns, just piled high right now, summer squash, and then some really beautiful, dark, juicy heirlooms. And because this market attracts a really big lunchtime crowd, as well as tourists who might want to purchase gifts to take home with them after their visit to New York, vendors really tend to cater to that, and they'll bring a lot of specialty kind of grab-and-go things. So like I mentioned, you know, yogurt, if you're on lunch, you want to pick up a yogurt, you can just take it back to your office and eat it or sit outside. There's also maple syrup in decorative bottles. Best Farm Kitchen is there all 3 days of the week. They've got mustards and chutneys, lemon curd, all sorts of special jams and jellies. Then there are different wine vendors there every day. So if you wanted to pick up a bottle of New York State wine and take that back to wherever you're visiting from to show off New York's terroir, that would be a great gift. And then also because this is a really, like I said, there are lots of people who work in offices in the area who might come out on their lunch break but not necessarily have time to shop. We're offering something called the Green Market Breeze Box. Breeze Box, which you can kind of come any day of the week, place an order, and pick it up the following Wednesday. So it's $25 for a curated box of market items. We'll put it together for you, and then you come and pick it up the next Wednesday. It's super easy if you don't have time to kind of, you know, shop around the market and pick stuff up on your own. So, like I said, the best thing is to check out the market's website on grownyc.org, and you'll find a full list of all the vendors that are there every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Oh, well, great. Well, for all those tourists who may be out there, or people who just have a day to enjoy, what else would people do in that neighborhood?
Yeah, well, there's so much. First of all, there's the shopping cannot be overlooked. There's Bloomingdale's, there's Bergdorf Swarovski if you want to pick up some crystals.
Of course.
There's St. Patrick's Cathedral. And then I've never been up to the observation deck at Top of the Rock, but when I was there this morning, I was really considering I should probably make it up there and check out views of the city. And then also there's always the Today Show set up outside. You can check out an early morning outdoor concert. And then there are newscasters all over the place. Keep your eyes peeled for Al Roker. He's usually around there somewhere. You can also sign up to take a tour of the NBC studios. So plenty to do.
Great. You can get your 15 minutes of fame in right there.
Exactly.
Well, Jean, so I know there's always something really exciting going on with the Green Market. What are some fun events that you guys have coming up?
Sure. Well, next week, I'm happy to report, is National Farmers Market Week. So the only thing you need to do to celebrate is go out and visit one of your farmers markets. We have them all over the city. And even if you're on vacation somewhere else in the country, it's great to always check out the farmers market wherever you might be visiting. And then out at our Staten Island Mall Green Market on Saturday, August 10th at 11 a.m., there's the Ethnic Foodways Project. They're going to be doing a cooking demo featuring Mexican food cooked with local ingredients found at the market. And on August 17th, the next Saturday, is National Can It Forward Day. So Ball Canning is going to join us at Union Square in our pavilion, and we'll be doing pickling, jamming, preserving demonstrations. So you can come by and pick out free recipes and get all sorts of tips on how to put up the harvest. And then another thing I wanted to mention was that it's August, and we are offering frequent shopper programs at a lot of our markets. So you can always stop in at the market info tent and find out all the details. But if you shop there often, definitely check it out, and you will be rewarded for your efforts for coming and checking in each week.
Well, great, great. I know where I'll be next week for National Farmers Market Week, absolutely. Make sure you all visit grownyc.org/our markets to find out more information on cooking demos, book signings, giveaways, all sorts of fun happenings each week at your local neighborhood green market. Well, thank you so much, Jean, for being with us here today. If people want a little bit more information on their farmers, the markets, or volunteer opportunities, make sure to check out their website, www.grownyc.org. Make sure you follow them on Twitter at Union Square Green Market and NYC Green Markets. Thank you so very much, and go eat something delicious.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.